Well, hello everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on the 23rd of September, 2020, and we thank you for listening today, or maybe you're listening on the archives. We know a lot of people listen on the archives, and we're happy to have you, okay, whenever you're listening. And if you want to find out what we're doing, just go over to ace-ed.org. That's our equity website, ace-ed.org, and we put up a new link over there, which is, we found it just easier to make it all in one website. We link up the Education Talk Radio podcast. You'll see it there. If you click through on that, you go right over to the Education Talk Radio site, since we're totally linked 100% with the American Consortium for Equity in Education. And you can follow what we're doing over there. So it's ace-ed.org. Then you'll see the Education Talk Radio podcast icon. You can just click right through there. And while you're there over at ace-ed.org, you'll see our magazine, which is called Equity and Access. Equity and Access. It used to be called Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity, but we're changing the title to Equity and Access. And that's an online journal, and the whole thing is over there. You'll see the giant icon of the cover, which looks beautiful. And what's inside this issue for the September issue is fantastic. And we, you know, we have the past issues up there as well, but this current issue for Back to School 2020 in this very strange year, okay, is really exceptional. So I hope you'll go over to ace-ed.org. I'll keep repeating that. And also, we'd love you to join our consortium. Everything we do over there is free to educators pre-K-20. So please, okay, go over, check it all out at ace-ed.org. We got a wonderful show today. I got a good friend of mine, Phyllis Wolfram, is here. She's the executive director for the Council of Administrators of Special Education, all right, which is called CACE. It's at kcec.org. And she has brought with her Dr. Kevin Rubenstein, who's the assistant superintendent for student services at the Elmhurst Community Unit School District, okay, in Elmhurst, Illinois. So let me say, first of all, hello to my buddy Phyllis. Hello, Phyllis. Phil, you there? Kevin, you there?
I am. Why here, am I? Yes. Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Okay, Kevin, that's fine. Where's Phyllis? I've got two lines open and she's not answering. Where is she?
Uh-oh, that's no good.
Phyllis, call back if you can hear me, because for some reason you're not coming through. But Kevin, you were there, so hopefully she heard me say that and we'll come back. Let me try again.
Yeah. I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, and you were in an 847 line, right?
I am, yes.
Yeah, so she's on the 615, but for some reason she's not connecting. I can't scream any louder, so hopefully she'll figure that out and call back in. Phyllis, you there?
No, this is Pastor Don, Jr., CEO. I'm here in the audience listening.
Oh, okay, Pat, welcome. Don't say anything, okay? We love you to be here. Thank you. Okay, let me put that on mute, okay, so we can do that. There we go. All right. Well, Kevin, that's an exciting way to start the show. That rarely happens.
There you go.
I don't know what's
that's
going
right.
on, Kevin. It's a pleasure to meet you. And actually, it's funny. I thought 615 was not area code for Phyllis to be calling in on, because I know she's over in Springfield, Missouri. But she thinks the world of you, by the way. She has been writing me all week how what an extraordinarily talented person you are.
You
okay?
know,
I feel like I'm Jewish,
and
I feel like talking. I feel like I'm talking to a Jewish mother here. It's unbelievable.
Well, there you go. I so appreciate that. So I am, as my friends say, I'm a cashew. So my mother is Catholic and my father is Jewish. So so we can have a little bit of that conversation here. So
I love that
but
cashew
Phyllis
line.
And I
never
are,
heard that.
Are
That's great.
Best friends. So,
so funny.
Yeah, exactly. So
right.
Yes,
half
exactly.
Roman Catholic,
so,
half Jewish. Okay, but this is the Jewish mother side.
Go.
So in order to find out how smart you are, I'm going to ask you two questions that will determine your intelligence. So Phyllis knows
okay.
once and for all. Is that okay?
Okay.
Question one.
That's
what
fine.
City is famous? What city is famous for Boston baked beans?
Boston.
Good. This is it. Phyllis is right. And who's buried in Grant's tomb?
Well, there you go, Grant. So.
You know, Phyllis is right. You are one heck of a guy.
General
Tell me
Grant.
What you,
there you go.
I got to tell you, Kevin Rubenstein, it's unbelievable. Okay, you're assistant superintendent now for student services in Elmhurst, Illinois. I used to live in Chicago, so I know Elmhurst pretty well. Tell everybody what
you're... Okay.
Yeah, I live in Maine now. I tend to gravitate towards really cold, bitter weather. What can I tell you? All right?
Well, I used to live in Maine as well.
Where did you live? My goodness.
So I did my graduate work at the University of Southern Maine, and my first graduate degree
in Gorham.
In adult and higher education. So I thought that I was going to work in higher education forever and ever. So I worked and lived in Gorham, Maine as a residence hall director and got my first graduate degree out there.
I'll be done. Did you happen to know a professor there named Dr. Lee Goldsberry?
The name is familiar. I don't know that our paths ever crossed. So.
Okay, Lee is a very close friend of mine. In fact, I'm probably going to go out with him this afternoon. He's retired now. Okay, and just
a great guy.
But he taught at USM and the education school for years. So I thought maybe your paths had crossed. Okay, good enough. Well, you're doing the opposite, Maine to Elmhurst. I went to Chicago, back to Maine here. Okay?
There you go. It's
really pretty cool. And Phyllis, I think, has joined us. Right, Phyllis?
I am. I apologize. I'm a little late. Had a little bit of office emergency this morning, but all is good.
I hope that emergency is all cleared up and everybody's fine, etc. Welcome, my good friend. I'm talking to Kevin here, who, you're right, he is a very intelligent guy.
He's one of the sharpest. I love working with him. Just love it.
I know you do.
Right,
I know you do.
Yeah.
I mean, really and truly, it's just great. Kevin is the chairperson over at CASE for policy and legislative. He's the chairperson of their policy and legislative committee. And that's what I want to talk about today. And, Phil, I'm so glad you were able to join us here. And I'll start with Phyllis on this one. Phyllis, who's the executive director of CASE, okay, talk about how you're involved in policy and legislation, because that's 50 different legislatures, okay, plus the federal government. So talk about that.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, because special education is a federal law, we look more to those federal legislation and policy pieces, and then we look to providing information to each of our states regarding those determinations. We do have a policy consultant that we work with in Washington, D.C., and Kevin works very closely with Myrna, and we disseminate information down to the states. We also work with each of our state units. Many times they will bring issues up to us and say, here's a few things connected to special education or directly related to special education, decisions that our state may be making, direction they may be going. And we assist by providing them some support, some conversation around the particular issue, help them maybe draft recommendations as they may have to educate and advocate regarding special education at the state level as well. Kevin, did I leave anything out on that? What would you add?
You know, I think that the interaction there between the federal and the state piece is really hugely important. So something that happens from time to time, as a matter of fact, it just happened yesterday, is that after, you know, a federal law gets passed, then there is state-level implementation. So a state will come back to – our state units will come back to CASE and say, can you help us with this model policy? Or what's going on in Illinois or in Missouri that can help guide us in Minnesota or Ohio. And so they come back to CASE and say, help us out with this. Or how can we influence our legislators in Minnesota or Ohio or make things happen in those sorts of ways. And so we really all try to work together and really help people to understand exactly the process for influencing legislators and making the policy and legislative process a little bit easier to navigate.
Did we answer your question, Larry?
Larry, are you still there?
We can't hear you.
There you are, guys. I had the phone on mute. I had the cough. I was listening to the whole time. Okay, but I had to put the phone on mute because I had to cough for a second. I'm fighting off a cold. My apologies. Okay, and I heard you both, and that was wonderful. Okay, you did a good job. And what I want to ask, and this is interesting, Phyllis, I don't know your background, but I'm sure you are. You come out of it. I shouldn't say I'm sure. Did you come out of education, Phyllis?
I did. I retired from public education after 35 years. 29 of those years, I functioned as a special education administrator.
There you go.
And I have worked in small rural districts to the largest urban district in Missouri, and then in one suburban district. So three different districts. I had an administrative career. And again, after 35 years, I said I'm ready to do something a little bit different and continue to have an impact.
Well, what you're doing now and what you do, because I remember you used to come on with Luann all the time. It's just amazing. And Kevin, I know we were talking about it prior to Phyllis joining us. You come out of the education world, and of course you're still involved as a superintendent. My question is regarding legislation and policy, and I'll throw this to Kevin. Kev, because you're in charge of that committee with Case. Kev, how do you become an expert? Okay, in policy and legislation. Did you ever think that with your education background you'd be so involved in that kind of thing and dealing with the policy and legislation? And I still say it again, statewide as well, you know, what the states need, your local organizations, as well as the feds. Okay, it's a whole different world from education. And Kevin, I'm going to ask you that. Talk about that world as different from education.
Right. I think that there is a very natural overlap for people who work in the field of special education to be involved in policy work. And that is because of the fact that as the primary implementers of the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, we are having to know and interpret law on a pretty regular basis. And so new regulations come down from the federal government and from your state government on a very regular basis. And so you are having to work with your teachers and work with your teams and work on your own to figure out really what those mean. And eventually you start to get very keen on really how does this process work? Reviewing a draft regulation, reviewing a piece of policy that has come down from the state or the federal government, what that means, and really making some quick sense of it. And so that is, for me, how I have just over and over again started to try to make sense of this. So you go from actually, implementing it at the local level and in your classroom and in your school and in your district to then wanting to influence that policy and see how you can make a change. So, for instance, at the state level, there was a situation in another local school district where some things were not going right with the way that some things were working with an educational cooperative and the way that they were interacting with each other and their members were interacting with each other. And so, but there was no policy, state law, that was regulating that. And so then after years of watching this, then as a state organization, a state affiliate of CASE, then you get to work with your legislators to actually write that law that is going to influence every other cooperative in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the federal level, it's the same sort of thing. So with the CARES Act and with IDEA and with reauthorization, as these things come down the pike, we are the people at the local level who are saying, this is the way it needs to work. this is what's actually happening on the ground, and here's how we actually implement this law on a day-to-day basis. And people, members of Congress, their staff, are consistently asking for our voice and our feedback about what's going on. And that's,
you know,
really
that's
important.
That's actually the next question I was going to ask you, okay? Because, again, you're chair for policy in the legislative committee over at CASE, the Council of Administrators of Special Education, all right? And how much attention, because this could get frustrating, okay, how much attention do the legislators pay to your advocacy, okay? Do you feel like there's really an ear there that they understand, and you do, that you, being the colloquial you, all the special ed educators, the special educators, okay, are the ones who are going to have to implement this. There's a big difference between what's passed and then what you can implement down there. And, you know, they tend to tell you to do all these things and not give you the money to do it. So I'm curious how the two things balance.
Okay. So I would say, Larry, this is a very relationship-oriented business. And because of that, we are working really hard every single day to develop relationships with members of Congress and their staff to connect people at all levels. So what that looks like is, for instance, we have every summer a special education legislative summit. So we typically bring people to Washington, D.C. This year we did it virtually, and so we had about 1,400 people who joined us virtually and had virtual meetings with their members of Congress. Well, you know, that connects people. That makes the connection. And so now when my member of Congress has a question about special education, in a pinch, they, our hope, and what we've actually seen started to happen, our hope is that they connect with a CASE member or a CEC member because they actually have that relationship. And so the more we attempt to build those relationships, the better off we're going to be. Now, that doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen in 1 year, really. It takes a lot of time. And so we are invested in this in the long haul. And so we continue to have our members send letters to Congress. We continue to have our members invest in this process. We continue to have great organizations work with us on making sure that they are engaging with their members of Congress when they're back at home and that their voice is being heard. All of it is important.
And you keep, and this is, I got so many questions here. You really good explanations on this, you know. And I want to ask this because education is a state function, and you keep saying national Congress, you know, the feds. And I just want to get into this. And Phyllis, you want to answer this, or Kevin, either one. Okay, what's the relationship with the state legislature? How much does that matter? Okay, so Kevin or Phyllis, who wants to answer? The state legislature.
Kevin, take it away. You've done a lot in the state of Illinois, so I'll let you.
Yeah, so it is. So we primarily rely on our state units to have those relationships with our state legislators. And so then what CASE does to support those state units is to make sure that they understand how to navigate a legislative process and to help them to have good model policies. So, for example, we just updated our policy related to restraint and seclusion, or when we're looking at social emotional learning, or navigating safer learning environments, those sorts of things, so that our state units have good model policies, so that when, for instance, those issues come up in a state, they can turn to CASE and say, what's a good model policy that we can turn back to our state legislators and say, this is where our position standpoint is. So a good, for instance, there is that several years ago in Illinois, when we were overhauling our school funding formula, we were, neck deep in the process. And behind closed doors, the legislators started to negotiate regarding taking money from public schools and sending it to private schools. Now, that is something that the Council of Administrators in Special Education and our colleagues in the Public Schools Coalition really adamantly opposes.
Right.
And rather than my state affiliate having to scramble to put together a position statement and several press releases about why we oppose that, there was ready-made templates that we had to change a few words and put together and were able to put out there within a matter of hours about why that was. And, you know, while we weren't able to stop it altogether because Illinois has their way, we were able to minimize it. And that's something that we're really proud of.
I'm proud of you, too, for doing that. And you know, I just got to keep asking these questions because I want to put these things into perspective for people. I have to ask this, Phyllis. I think Kevin said 1,400 people showed up for the virtual Washington, D.C. Advocacy Summit. Is that correct, Phil?
It is correct. And, you know, I think people have a real interest in building those relationships with their representatives and their senators so that they can provide information. You know, Kevin made a real important point about building the relationship and providing information. You know, the IDEA is such a complex law with so many compliance and federal regulation standards. The one group of people that is responsible for implementing that entire law are special ed directors, the person who's in charge of special education in the school district. Therefore, they're the ones who need to be the go-to for our congressmen. And as of late, that has happened. They have asked Case. They have said, tell us what's happening with maintenance of effort. What is going on with regard to the local school districts? Are they going to maintain that? Will they have to pay money back? You know, that's just one small, well, it's really a big issue, but that's just one aspect of a federal requirement that people know very little about.
When you say that, that's one aspect of a requirement. It's just everything is so deep and so complicated, and that's why you guys, because you're special ed administrators, and who knew that when you were in college, and I mean this to everybody, that you were, you know, you learned how to deal with kids who need special education. Suddenly you have to understand legislation too, and how you can advocate for that. It's really a two-edged sword. It's just amazing. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, when you had your summit physical before COVID, okay, Phyllis, how many people showed up in Washington?
I think our last one that we did on-site was our highest attended, and we had, I think, just over 300 people.
Exactly.
So what we know is there are a lot more people interested in advocacy and education at that level, but might not have the means by which to come face-to-face. So technology, in some respects, Larry, is opening up another door for us to have a voice and to build relationships with those that are far away from
us
on a daily basis. And, you know, another real important point that
I want to say something else. The fact that 1,400 people showed up versus 300, 1,400 virtual, everything's virtual this year, that has to say something to the legislators, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. It's easy to, if I may, and I don't mean to just take this for what I'm saying, it's easy to write off 300. It's not so easy when the number gets into the thousands. Okay.
Correct.
Right.
It's that simple. There, you know, power in numbers, and for all the horror of this damn pandemic, okay, there were certain things that are coming out of it that are going to make a long term difference. Okay.
Larry, to follow up on that, you know, when we're in Washington D.C. physically there together, our leadership team that puts the summit together. We are often so busy that we actually like some of us don't get to always participate in our state team meetings, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
One of the things we were able to do this year, because we had a little bit more time and because we were virtual, is that we were able to not only participate in those meetings, but we also scheduled meetings with offices in the leadership offices. So with Speaker Pelosi's office and with the minority leader and with the appropriations chairs. And and to talk a little bit, then you get to talk a whole lot more in depth about special education and funding and maintenance of effort and all of these issues that a local member of Congress may not be able to dive so deep into those issues on, but those appropriators and the speaker's office and the minority leader's office may really actually need to and want to hear from you about. So, because they need to have that perspective on. So that was the first time that we've ever done that, and it was just so helpful to us, and we know has been helpful to them.
And I'm glad you went to both sides of the aisle, by the way, with terms of leadership. That really
helps.
Yeah, it really does. And you know, as you guys know, Congress is having trouble, okay, passing more COVID pandemic relief, okay, and freeing up those dollars. We won't get into the politics of that, but that raises a question about education dollars, and what's changing legislatively and advocacy-wise, okay, in special education because of COVID. Obviously, things are not the same as they were a year ago, okay? So my question, I guess I'll throw this one to Kevin again. I'll lay it on you, Kev. All right, here we go, Dr. Rubenstein. You ready? What's changing? What's the advocacy legislative changes because of COVID?
So I think that we have we've talked on this podcast so far really about the state pieces and about Congress, and it is really easy to forget that there are two other branches of the government. So that being the executive branch, and for us, where we're really focused on are the Department of Ed and the regulations that they issue and what goes on there. And so from an equity perspective.
And also, maybe you said there are other branches of government, the judicial as well, which, by the way, is hard to forget this week, what with this Justice Ginsburg dying last
the
week. It happens to be in the news.
Yes,
but we'll just move on from that one. Yeah.
And I'm gonna get back to that in just a second. So,
oh, good.
So
thank you, Kim.
From the executive branch, what we're looking at is our relationships with the Department of Ed and how we interact with the Office for Special Education and Rehabilitative Services and the Office for Civil Rights and how we interact with those offices there and the regulations that they issue there. So, you know, in the recent past, they have issued regulations related to disproportionality in special education, which is sort of a wonky term for, the disproportionality in terms of the number of students of color that are identified in special education over time and the number of students that are disciplined at different levels and what that actually looks like and how you use your money. And so we've been working with the Office for Special Education Programs in making sure that that is understood. So that's the first part. But then from a judicial, and so there's a lot of relationships that you've got to build there with the Department of Ed. And
right, which again, let's say it again, so in case anybody doesn't know, that's the executive branch. That's the cabinet.
That's the executive branch. That's exactly it. And then there's all of the other pieces of the executive branch related to, you know, Department of Health and Human Services, and they sometimes issue regulations that impact us. You know, the Department of the FDA will, right now, they're issuing a lot of things that impact us. So I've learned more about masks in the last, you know, 2 months than I ever cared to know about, you know, masks in my entire life. And then from the other branch of government, from the judicial branch, they're interpreting the laws And what we are doing there is that we are amping up our efforts to make sure that when there is a court case that comes through the judicial branch that makes its way through, we have typically signed on to several amicus briefs or friend of the court briefs to let them know how case or education organizations feel about those sorts of things. But we are very interested in forming our own sort of amicus brief group made up of special education attorneys and what that looks like, and to really attempt to specifically influence the way that the courts think about special education and make sure that it it comes from a place where it is going to be student friendly and school friendly, and that they really understand what is going on and how it's going to impact everybody here.
It's really amazing what's going on. And I must ask this, it's an election year. Okay, in case you didn't know that, Phyllis and Kevin, it's an election year.
I know, I forgot.
Quiet out there.
Completely forgot.
Yeah. And I wanted to I'm trying to remind you and everyone there is an election coming up. And by the way, it's a presidential election. It's President Trump versus Joe Biden. I know you probably aren't aware of that, but I just thought I'd let you know. Okay, and I have to must ask, I'm going to ask for a change, a political question. I'm just curious about this. Are you guys taking a political stance in any of this? How do you walk that line? And Phyllis, if you want to answer that, you can, or you can swing it over to Kevin.
Well, you know, I'll start if Kevin has anything to add. We have not, we do not take a political position, as special education is truly, you know, a bipartisan issue. Everyone,
I would hope.
In public education, yes, we need to be having the best interest of our students at heart. So we have not done that, but we have encouraged and will continue to encourage everyone to vote. We just most recently provided some resources in our weekly update. We did a two-part series of providing resource information to our administrators, who hopefully passed that on to their teachers. You know, they were resources in how to get our students with disabilities to vote and to educate them when they become voting age. So we were very excited to push some of those resources out and to really encourage our special education teachers to talk to their students, again, who are of voting age, to vote in this presidential election.
That is wonderful. What a great answer. I love that. You talk about civics and everything we do and being good citizens and teaching people to be good citizens. I can't emphasize that enough. I want to throw another word out there. And, Kevin, you probably heard me at the beginning of the show. Okay, we deal a lot. We are the here at Education Talk Radio, we're part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education, and that's our website, which is ace-ed.org, and I hope you'll join in with us, etc. But when I throw out the word equity to you, Kevin, okay, and from the point of view of CASE, as a special ed director yourself, you're the assistant superintendent for student services, okay, in Elmhurst, and you're the chair of the legislative committee, how's the word equity sit in there with what you're doing?
So it's pretty important. I think that what comes
Thank
to
you.
Mind is that what comes to mind is that students and staff have what they need in order to move to their next level of challenge. And so it has to do with removing barriers that are going to be in their way. It has to do with and those barriers can be systemic barriers that can be in place. So, you start looking at things like handbooks or course policies that allow or disallow people to take certain courses, and what does that actually look like? Or course placement processes that allow people to place into certain courses, and what does that actually look like? And so from the local level, when we're thinking about special education, I think that when we're looking at equity across the board, what often happens is that we see a systemic piece students with disabilities being left behind, and sort of being put to the side. Whether that be because of the fact that they are a student with a disability or because they also have other factors that are sort of force multipliers, so whether it be a race factor or an ethnicity factor or some other sort of factor, a gender factor that may be impacting them there, they are sort of pushed to the side. And I have, I learned a long time ago, actually, when I was in Maine, and have always had in my heart this idea that people on the margins need to be moved and worked with in the middle. And we need to make sure that everybody's voice is heard. And so we're looking for those people on the margins because their voices are often not heard.
That's right.
in these conversations, and we need to make sure that their voices are elevated at all levels. And that so often does not happen in special education. So
too often it does not happen. And I have to say, and I think most people would agree with me, the pandemic, for all its horror, please don't misunderstand that. Okay, but it's having, I'll call it a positive effect, because it's making these things more transparent. All right. What we used to hide behind a closed door, or I'd always say kick the can down the road, suddenly we couldn't do that anymore. Okay. Because everything changed.
Yeah.
All right. And we're recognizing this. And all those things that you said a minute ago, you know, it's been disregarded all these years. All of a sudden, it's not being disregarded anymore. Okay. It's out there in the open. Okay. And in the end, again, for all the horror there is with this pandemic and the social upheaval that it's causing, it's going to do some good in some places, and I think that's one of them, okay, that there's a certain transparency, and I think it's going to be, yeah, I hope so too, it's going to be easier to make these points across because you're legislative, okay? It's hard to make people who aren't doing this every day but who are responsible for our laws understand, or for our laws and regulations, I should say, understand what's going on. Okay, for these kids. And we've opened up the voices, and I think it's really, really important. If you guys ever, and Phyllis, you know you have a standing invitation, but, you know, Case is always welcome into the magazine, okay, to talk about these things, okay, our magazine, Equity and Access. You guys are always welcome in there, and I hope you take advantage of that. We got to go right now, okay, but please take advantage of that. It's great. Kevin, join our consortium. We'd love to have your voice heard in there as well, okay? Again,
I'd
all
be
free
happy
over
to. Thank you.
Okay, please do. Please do. You're invited as well as your colleagues in pre-K-12. It's really, really important. Phyllis, you're doing a heck of a job out there. Phyllis just started, by the way, as executive director at the beginning of this year, which much seemed like an eternity ago, okay, considering this year. Am I right?
Yeah. March 1st, the month of
and the
March,
pandemic.
My first month. Yeah, yeah, it looked very different than what I thought it was going to be, but it has been. It's been a great challenge. I've had great people to work with.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Kevin Rubenstein here and my other Case executive committee members. So we feel like we have truly shifted, and like every teacher in the nation, we've pivoted to provide the support that that we can to our members and to those special ed leaders in the field. So
yeah,
it's been a pretty good ride so far, Larry.
Well, yeah, it's been a pretty good ride because you have great people working with you, and you took over from Luann Purcell, who left you one heck of a thriving organization. I know how good you guys work together.
She
all right,
did, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, she really did. But, you know, it's now the new, this, quote, the new people, the good people in there that are doing the job like you two, Phyllis and Kevin, I got to tell you. Okay,
yeah.
And I don't know where we'd be without you in this day and age, so I got to thank you both. Okay, and thank you for being on the show.
This
was great. Okay?
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Anytime, Kev. Phyllis, thanks a million. Both of you, stay safe, please, okay?
All right.
And thank you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Phyllis Wolfram, who's the executive director of the Council of Administrators of Special Education, that's CACE.org. All right. And Kevin Rubenstein, I think is the way he likes to pronounce it, Kevin Rubenstein, is the assistant superintendent for student services in Elmhurst, Illinois, district number 205. God forbid they should call them by their city names in Illinois. I know that story. Okay. And he's also the chair for policy and legislation, the committee at Case. He knows his stuff. He's a good guy. Okay. On his way to he's doing big things already. He's on his way to bigger things. I can guarantee you that. That's Kevin Rubenstein. All right. Well, go over and check out ace-ed.org. The show will be archived over there under the Education Talk Radio podcast. Just click through on that. Join our consortium. We really want your voice heard for equity. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Can't thank you enough for listening, and have a safe day.